This is Elsie Olushelari in Lagos. Governor Andrew F. Brimmer, a member of the Board of Governors of the United States Federal Reserve System, is our guest today. Governor Brimmer is the first to come to West Africa on an official visit. Mr. Emmanuel Omashola, regular contributor to VOA programs, and Mr. Jab Adu, banker and company secretary, will be talking to Governor Brimmer about his visit to Africa, more so Nigeria. Over to you, gentlemen.
Well, Governor Brimmer, it is not often that we play host in this part of the world to an august visitor like you. It makes us think straight away that there is something in the offing, not something terribly large, but perhaps this is just a personal visit for your own duty as governor of a central bank, or perhaps this is all tied up with the international run of things, you know, where we visit each other and get to know about each other's problems for the future.
Well, yes, there's some of all of what you said behind this visit. As was indicated, this is the first time a member of the Federal Reserve Board has come to West Africa, or for that matter, in a part of Africa, sub-Saharan Africa, that is, on an official visit. The main purpose of my visit is to spend some time with my central banking counterparts in the five countries. In fact, four of the countries have central banks of one kind or another, and the fifth country is debating the question. Just to put the whole thing in perspective, the five countries I have visited are Sierra Leone, Liberia, Ivory Coast, Ghana, and now Nigeria. And when I leave Nigeria, I will go to Denmark to visit with the central bank there. But as far as the West African portion of the visit is concerned, I'm mainly interested in getting a better feeling for the organization and operations of the central banks in the area. But I have a somewhat broader interest. I'm also aiming to talk with and have talked with ministers of finance, economic ministers. I've also made an effort to visit with American businessmen in each community where I've stopped. And I've talked to a rather broad spectrum of West African citizens, mainly businessmen and professionals, but also other people when I could meet them. The one country which does not have a central bank is Liberia. And in Liberia, as you may recall, the American dollar circulates as the currency. That's a long tradition since the country was established. But now the government is debating among its own members, among the members of the government, but also among the bankers in the country, the businessmen and the private citizens, and the academicians. They're debating the question of whether they should establish their own currency and whether they should set up their own central bank. And when the word went out that I was making this trip to West Africa, I was asked explicitly while in Liberia to talk with the government officials about the question of a central bank. And naturally, once one is there, he talks more generally. For example, I participated in a program at the University of Liberia, which was a radio program, on the question of a central bank. And so it's being broadly debated. So the central banking theme runs through my entire trip. But I'm also interested in, as I said, in problems of economic development and financing. And I've given some special attention to the question of the African Development Bank.
Yes, I was going to come in to ask you about that, really. What have you seen about this continental bank on this visit?
Well, I spent some time in Abidjan with the officials of the African Development Bank. As you may know, the institution currently does not have a president. The members of the African Development Bank, who are all Africans, there are no outsiders participating in that institution, will be meeting later this month in Fort Laramie to elect a president. I was mainly interested in getting a feeling for the progress they have made so far with the capital they now have. And I was interested also in trying to assess the feelings among African government officials and here in West Africa, especially the finance ministers and their associates and central bankers and their associates, about the future of the institution. An effort is being made to establish a special fund of some kind, which would be a soft loan fund. You see, so far the African Development Bank is the only one among the three major regional development institutions which does not have a facility which would permit them to make low interest rate, long maturity loans. The Inter-American Development Bank has one, and the Asian Development Bank, which came into being after the African Development Bank, has such a fund contributed by some of the more prosperous and more developed countries outside the region, especially in the case of Asia. In the case of Latin America, most of their funds clearly come directly from within the American community, especially from the United States. So I was anxious to get a feed in for that as well. Until the African Development Bank gets its new president, of course, and the institution can then focus on some of the ways in which it itself would want to move, I doubt if we'll be in a position to focus sharply on the question of a special fund. Within the United States government, at some point I will participate in the decision whether we should or should not contribute to that fund if, in fact, machinery can be worked out to establish it.
Still on the African Development Bank, does the Federal Reserve Bank actually play any part in the financing of the African Development Bank?
No, it does not. In fact, no central bank plays a part, as far as I know, in the financing of the African Development Bank. No central bank plays a part as such, as far as I know, in the financing of any of the regional institutions. That is, direct financing. Now, I assume that in other countries, the central bank will have some comment, some opportunity to participate within its own government as to participation in that institution. In the case of the United States, for example, at the Federal Reserve, we are members of the agency, the group. I shouldn't call it an agency, let me call it a committee. It's called the National Advisory Council on International Monetary and Financial Policy. This is a wholly federal government committee consisting of 5 members. It's chaired by the Secretary of the Treasury, who, as you know, is the counterpart of your finance minister. He has the Secretary of State and the Secretary of Commerce. Those are 3 members. And the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, which is our apex of our central bank, and the president of the Export-Import Bank. And each of these principals has an alternate who actually casts the votes and handles the day-to-day policy questions. And then each agency has a staff, which it contributes to the committee. And at the Federal Reserve, I am the alternate member of that NAC, and in that sense, I participate with my colleagues and the rest of the government in giving some counsel and guidance to the United States executive directors at the World Bank, at the International Monetary Fund, at the Inter-American Development Bank, and at the Asian Development Bank. If it ever gets to the point where the United States participates in any way in the African Development Bank, undoubtedly the same machinery will come into play. But so far, we are not participants in the African Development Bank, and so there's no direct role or even indirect role that we play, except in the long run, since obviously this whole situation is moving in a direction where a solution must be found, since the African Development Bank obviously needs additional resources.
Yes, thank you, Governor Brimah. Now, you've been in Nigeria for some few days now, and you've had an opportunity to meet the central bank officials and officials of the ministries. Can you tell us, in what way do you think these informations or whatever it is you might learn during your visit here improve or add to the relationship which exists between the Federal Reserve Bank and the central bank of these countries.
Oh yes, we'd be delighted to. As I started out saying, I was visiting mainly the central bankers in West Africa, and I, in response to an earlier question, I said I was the first board member to visit West Africa. Visits of the sort I'm making are frequent, in fact, almost, they're traditional in the countries of Western Europe, Latin America, Japan, and so on. I personally spend most of my time in Western Europe, given the nature of my own responsibility in international finance, concerned with balance of payments and direct investment flows and so on. I spend most of my time in Western Europe. Those visits permit us to understand each other better, to learn more about each other's financial markets, institutions, and so on. I hope that the same would be true for West Africa. I would expect in the future to have a better appreciation for economic development problems, financial questions, trade, because after all, the volume of trade and investment between the United States and West Africa is substantial, especially the volume of trade. The Export-Import Bank, which, as I said earlier, is an institution in whose business I participate at a distance from time to time, has made a number of loans out here. For example, in one country, I visited a dam now under construction, and that dam was started with financing provided by the Export-Import Bank. I participated in the decision, actually cast the vote when that decision was being made. So it was very helpful to go and look at the other end to see how the project was actually coming out, when it was not simply a debate over money, but now they have earth-moving machinery out and the dam is actually under construction. So I'm hopeful. I cannot say when I would come back to West Africa. Hopefully I will come back. But while this is the first visit of a Federal Reserve Board member, of a governor, to West Africa, this is by no means the first contact between central banks in West Africa and the Federal Reserve. Quite contrary. For example, the governor of the central bank here in Nigeria, Governor Esong, worked at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York in 1957 after he left Harvard. In fact, I first met him at the commencement exercises at Harvard in 1957 when we both got PhDs. And I was already at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York at that time, and he came along and spent 6 to 9 months or sometime like this. Central bank and staff people from banks in West Africa come to the Federal Reserve continuously, either in one of our regional banks, especially the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, or they come to Washington. Moreover, people from the Federal Reserve system frequently go on loan to central banks in West Africa and East Africa and so on, as well as they do in Latin America and whatnot. For example, there were two people here in the Central Bank of Nigeria who came from the Federal Reserve, one from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, one from the Federal Reserve Board. And they spent 2 years here working in the bank in its early days trying to help get things started. So the contact is not new. What is, I suppose, the new thing is that I've come, that a governor has come.
Governor Bremer, I'd like to go back to the African Development Bank. What have you seen, either from your contacts with banking in this part of the world or on this your current visit, are the problems facing the African Development Bank, especially now that it has just made a quick start, like the Asian Development Bank, for instance?
Well, first of all, I remember on one visit, although I've been aware of the institution and looked at its problems for some time, this is the first time I've taken a sharp focus on the institution. And naturally, I would not want to be in the position of trying to evaluate the institution closely. But in broad outline, and I'm certain they would agree with this, the main problem, the fundamental problem, is that the bank doesn't have any money of magnitude and of the kind which would permit it to operate on a large scale. Which need not be explored here, I understand that a decision was made in the early days of the bank, in the early 1960s when the bank was getting underway. A decision was made not to have outside participation. In other words, all of the membership in the African Development Bank would be held by African nations. This is in contrast to the situation which existed at that time with respect to the Inter-American Development Bank. And it's in contrast with the situation which later came about when the Asian Development Bank was formed, which I said is newer than the African Development Bank. In both of those cases, outside participation in the capital of the bank meant that they started off with a substantially greater capital resources than the African Development Bank, because the industrial countries participated. In the case of the Inter-American Development Bank, specifically the United States. In the case of the Asian Development Bank, it meant the United States and Japan came into it with sizable capital contributions. Moreover, as I said earlier, both of those other institutions have been able to establish funds, special funds, into which the developed countries have made sizable contributions, and these funds can be loaned at very low interest rates. And so they've been able to make the kind of loans to developing countries, to their borrowers, which they could afford to use for long-term development projects. This is not true in the case of the African Development Bank, and that is why I understand they are making a vigorous effort to establish some kind of special fund. So they need more resources. Secondly, they clearly need to strengthen their staff, not simply the president, which we mentioned, but this is something they will tell you, tell anybody who visits with them. They do need to strengthen their staff. They do need to improve their ability to evaluate and follow through on projects. So it's a question of additional resources and additional strengthening of their staff. And from my conversation with them and from my conversation with the finance ministers and their associates whom I visit, who serve on the board, you see, of the African Development Bank, from each of the member countries, there will be a senior official, usually the Minister of Finance or his deputy, who will serve on the board. So I've talked to them. And on the basis of all those conversations, I'm quite hopeful about the future of the African Development Bank.
As you know, the African Development Bank is committed to the economic development of the West African region. How much of this was talked to you about during this your visit?
Well, not so much talking about the regional, specific regional projects in which the African Development Bank might participate. Clearly, these came in one way or another. But the main thrust on regionalism came through my visit with several of the countries, for example. Clearly, in Liberia, one of the things people talked about vigorously, and not only in Liberia, but in Sierra Leone, in Ivory Coast, Ghana, and here in Nigeria, but especially in the four countries to the west, about tying together the countries in a regional network of communication, not only roads, but telecommunications as well. I heard several discussions about the rationalization of production of certain manufactured goods. For example, several people said, look, we produce a lot of rubber. Why couldn't we have regional arrangements to produce rubber goods, for example, rubber tires, which might be produced in one country, whose market might not be big enough to afford a plant of that capacity. But the regional market could be done. Clearly, in some cases, they talked about the opportunity to have, say, petroleum refineries. And the question was raised. Now you look up and down the coast of West Africa, you already have petroleum. Others are looking, and some may about to strike it, and so on. Will you end up with four, five, six large-scale refineries all trying to produce and compete for the same kinds of limited markets, or will you all end up selling out raw materials? I heard of another case, what about automobile assembly? What about a steel mill, and so on? I did encounter discussions about regionalism and hopefully arrangements to try to put it together. And against that background, then if the African Development Bank were to evolve with the resources and staffs and so on, it could be very helpful. I also talked from time to time with people who are asking about the relationship between the African Development Bank and the World Bank. After all, the World Bank is expected and is playing an active role and expected to continue to play an active role in the economic development of Africa, West Africa included. And I saw no one who thought that the African Development Bank would or could or should replace the World Bank as a source of development resources.
Good. Now, during your visits to most of these countries, can you tell us some of the impressions of the economies of the regions you've been to?
Well, again, obviously, a visit of several days in each country or a week in a particular country is far too short. Although one might read a lot and work with one staff people to learn more about the region even before one comes, one actually acquires a rather unfirm base for making such generalizations. But having said that, let me say that the thing that struck me, and I assume would strike anyone who went into the region with an eye to learn something, is that the countries are enormously rich in resources. There are no poor countries along the route I've traveled from west, starting out in Sierra Leone to the west and coming on east to Nigeria. They have enormous endowments of resources. Strong population. Some have very small populations, and that's a handicap in some cases. You know, the old argument that too many people are a burden, but for development. But there's obviously some optimum population you must have in relation to resources in order to develop. And given these resources and given the strong populations, it's clear that one ought to be optimistic about the potential in these countries. On the other hand, it's also obvious that there will be a demand for outside resources, capital, since development means long-term investment. The savings flows in the countries simply are not sufficient. They have to develop institutions, have to lay down infrastructure, and so on. So this will require investment, and so I was pleased to see that in every country I visited, serious thought is being given to ways of mobilizing and attracting these external resources. So I came away from each country feeling optimistic.
Well, as you have yourself implied just now, no country is an island in the world. But what access have West African monetary institutions to world monetary institutions?
Well, the access now is obviously limited. Most of the West African countries simply cannot compete in the international capital markets. It isn't simply the West African countries. It's the developing countries. The countries who up to now have not been able to develop their own financial markets. They simply cannot compete against the strong borrowers. And it isn't that they can't compete because people don't like them. That's not the issue. The issue is, can they pay 7, 8, 9% interest rates for 7, 8, 10, 12, 15 year money? And the answer is no. That is not what they require. They typically require much longer term funds, 15, 20, 30, 40 year funds. You can't build highways and dams with 10-year money at 9%. Instead, you need some way to get longer-term resources at substantially lower rates of interest. And that is why in our discussion a few minutes ago about the African Development Bank and the other regional institutions, I put great stress on some kind of special fund which would permit this kind of resource to flow. I would hope that the international institutions, the World Bank and so on, would act as a vehicle to increase the access of West African countries to the international capital markets.
Well, let me follow up that point, though you were just developing it. Is it possible for the World Bank and other world monetary institutions, knowing the limitations of the West African countries, to take them on for some period as toddlers, let me say, you know, teaching them to walk until they can cope?
Well, yes, they're already doing it. We know that the World Bank has a number of projects in West Africa, and others are underway. It's my understanding that the World Bank, in fact, I know the World Bank has an office here with a full-time staff man working on projects. We know that there is a close relationship between the World Bank and Nigeria, for example, and that projects are being financed here of substantial size and scope. If you look through the rest of West Africa, World Bank funds are going into palm oil production, for example. I know they are debating other kinds of activities which could be financed. So in my discussions with World Bank people, I don't see any reticence about participating in West Africa. I do find a number of hard-headed questions being asked about the viability of projects and the quality of the analytical work being devoted to making judgments. And I think these are exactly the kinds of questions which a government would want a lender to ask. After all, it does no one any good to be led haphazardly into financial arrangements, which in short order turn out to be not only burdensome, but counterproductive. Without being invidious and criticizing specific projects, it's clear that a number of instances have arisen in which countries try to finance long-term development projects with supplier credits or other short-term money on the assumption of 2-3 year money to get it started, on the assumption that by the time those short-term debts became due, it would be possible to find the long-term money in some way, and clearly this did not turn out to be true. On the other hand, this is not a serious problem for most countries, most developing countries. After all, from what little I've seen about the relationship between, say, export earnings and debt service, since you have to pay the debt services out of export earnings in some way, that the proportion of export earnings required to service debt is rather small, especially here in Liberia. I understand you have a rather particularly small ratio of debt service to export earnings. In some other countries, unfortunately, that happy circumstance does not exist. And to a considerable extent, those difficult situations arose because of an effort to deal with fundamental development requirements with short-term money. So I think the World Bank is playing a highly constructive role in trying to make certain that the project is sound, that it they will be able to repay the loan and make a net contribution as well.
Coming back home once more, one more question. Can you tell us any differences between our central bank system here and your Federal Reserve Bank system in America?
Well, yes, the first one that strikes the eye, and of course I knew this when I came here, but since you asked me, I'll mention it. The one that strikes the eye is that you have what we call a unitary central bank. You have one governor and one or more deputy governors. Now you have one deputy governor. That's the typical arrangement in the world, and you have five or six branches around the country. In our case, we have a board of governors, not one governor and a deputy or two, but seven governors, a chairman, a vice chairman, and five other board members, each of whom has one vote. So there are seven members, seven votes. That's at the board itself, which is the top unit in our system. And then we have 12 regional banks, and they in turn, among them, have 24 branches. But ours is one of the older systems. Of course, I must hesitate in comparing with West Africa. We have an older central bank, but obviously compared with the Bank of England, Bank of France, and so on, we're a child in terms of age and maturity. So our structure is different. Our functions are different also. Not wholly, but to some extent. There are certain things which are common between us. The central bank here acts as a government fiscal agent. It has the, it issues the banknotes, currency, and so on. And it maintains supervisory relations over the commercial banks. They could borrow for them and so on. It discounts bills for them and whatnot. In other words, it acts as a source of funds for the commercial bank. We do the same. But we have a few other functions where we do differ. And these are related more to our financial, the structure of our financial institutions than anything inherent with the bank itself. For example, our principal way of supplying additional resources, additional funds, is through our money market, which is, you know, we have a highly developed money market where we deal in government securities, but that market also has a number of other institutions in it, in addition to commercial banks. And this makes it possible for the Federal Reserve to follow different channels of influence. Now, it's my understanding that the central bank here has more direct reach over the commercial banks. For example, they can set credit ceilings. For example, they can specify rates of growth of bank credit for particular sectors of the economy. We cannot do that. Not that we don't do it, but under the law, we cannot do that. We first of all, do not have sway over all of the commercial banks in the United States. There are some 13,000 banks in the United States. Some would say about 6,000 are members of the Federal Reserve System. Some 7,000 are not members. But that is not as strange as it may seem. The ones who are not members are the smaller state-chartered institutions. All of the banks which get their charters from the national government must be members of the Federal Reserve. In fact, a more general way to describe the situation is to say that the 6,000 banks constituting less than half the banks by number have about 85% of all of the deposits held by all the commercial banks combined in the United States. So while our structure differs, we are not a particularly weak central bank. We do have substantial control above all over the money supply, bank credit, and so on. And so the machinery differs, but the overall mode of operation and objectives are roughly parallel.
Well, before we bring the conversation to an end, is there anything else you'd like to add, Governor Brimmer, that we haven't covered?
No, simply to say that I'm having a delightful time in Nigeria, and this is a splendid visit.
Well, we hope we'll come back again sometime.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much indeed for featuring on the program. You have been listening to a discussion between Governor Andrew F. Brimmer, a member of the Board of Directors of the United States Federal Reserve System, the first governor to come to West Africa on an official visit, Emmanuel Omashola, a regular contributor to VOA programs from Lagos, Mr. Jabadu, banker and company secretary. This is Elsie Olushola, Voice of America, Lagos.